everyone. Lauren here. I just wanted to give you a proper introduction to this interview episode. I had the pleasure of speaking with Megan Smith of Melody Note Vintage. I discovered her on TikTok, and I have to say I've been a student of hers, I think, just kind of parasocially for the last probably few months or almost a year, it seems like, listening and watching her content. So it's really great. I'm so excited to put this out because I feel like there were just so many questions I had to ask about, you know, growing up and essentially coming of age in the grunge scene in Seattle, which, as you know, is my, you know, obsession and sweet spot. So we talked about fashion, about sustainability, and just, you know, the process of seeing the world change that we've seen so much. So enjoy this interview. I have Megan from Melody Note Vintage.
Hi.
Hi.
For having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you. I discovered you on TikTok because I feel like I'm a student of yours. I always learn something from your videos, love hearing your stories. So I'm stoked. I'm stoked to ask you about everything.
The reason I ended up on TikTok is because people would come in the store and they'd be like, I saw you on TikTok. Like someone would take a video at the store. And I would always say, like, I'm in my 50s. Like, I'm not on TikTok, you know, but yeah. Like, thanks for coming in. Right. And my shop assistant at the time, who was 26, just said, you know, people on TikTok really love education. You should make educational videos. You're really good at education. And one summer I just randomly made a video, and that's kind of found. I don't even know if I have a niche. My niche is like, I talk about music, I talk about fashion, and I talk about what interests me, which I think is kind of what your podcast also is like. We're talking about movies, but we're talking about clothes, but we're talking about music. We are talking about modern day fashion, and then sort of talking about references and those types of things.
Oh, totally. I mean, completely. I don't want to, I guess, school anyone. I'm like, this is what I like. This is what I like. If you like it, cool. If you never heard of this, cool. Then check it out. But I definitely think when the landscape was starting out, when everybody had blogs and stuff, I was constantly getting almost the same thing that you respond to in some of your stitches, which I really love, is people kind of telling you what about your opinion or about your lived experience, but not having lived that experience. And they're like, yeah, no, you're wrong. Nirvana says, I was like, okay, guys, I just like the Nirvana music and I've watched the documentaries. I did not say that I know anyone. Like, it's music, guys. It's fucking music. Like, let's just talk about the music. And, or I get massive, like, Courtney Love killed Kurt Cobain. I was like, oh God, like, this is, I mean, that's how it was in the beginning. And now, thankfully, it's a bit more normalized, but I still get that. But I'm like, I'm just talking about what I like, which is basically like what you do.
Well, I think everyone likes to throw their hat in the ring because we're all sort of anonymous to a certain extent, right? And so it's really hard to have to explain your history, because here's the reality. Your opinion is your lived history with that thing, right? Mm-hmm. Someone else's lived history is going to be different. There are going to be historians who know way more about Nirvana than I do, and they might have never seen them, but because they don't do anything else but eat and sleep and think about Nirvana, they probably do know more than I do. It doesn't change my lived experience of seeing them before they were famous. Or seeing lots of bands for $5 that people are like, $5? Yeah. Like, but that's what shows cost then.
That's not what they, like, should cost.
The outrageous thing. It's like you went to shows and they were like $5 or $6. You know, you took out $20 from a bank machine and you paid $5 to get in and you got drunk and maybe you walked home or you took a bus home. That's a lived experience, right?
Yeah. But oh, totally.
If you're writing a book about Nirvana or Mudhoney or Seattle or any of that stuff, you're invested.
Yeah. Right? Totally.
Thinks you have authority, which is not necessarily wrong, but it doesn't change your lived experience with something, how something makes you feel.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I wish, and we're going to get into, I guess, you being in and around the scene that kind of just sprouted, which is one, a really amazing thing that I don't know if some youth knows about now because everything is so connected, but it really depended on your location, let's say 30 years ago. I grew up in DC, so the Discord Records, like, you know, like Henry Rollins is obviously a figure here, Dave Grohl, yada, yada, yada. And we have some other people, Ian MacKay, like Fugazi, Minor Threat. I was a little bit younger on that side, but I remember going to like a lot of shows and seeing Ian Anyways versus Beanie. He's always around town, which is pretty cool. And we had this really small scene. Super nice.
He's a nice guy.
Super cool.
You call on the phone in the 90s and you want to figure out like where to send posters to a record store or like what radio station you should contact about a tour. If he answers the phone, he's going to help you. He's going to chat with you as it should be, right? Mm-hmm.
As it should be.
And completely. That's sort of a lost, that's some like, I hate to say tribal knowledge because I don't think that's the right word. And I've not found, maybe you have a better word. I haven't found a better word, but that's sort of like a torch that's passed down in the punk community, but like...
And just helping people. Yeah, and helping people. Even bands that were kind of mismatched would be on these really cool bills that I feel like now it's all very like, it's in the same vein, but you would get just these really diverse shows back in the day, especially like house shows, which I don't know. I mean, I know a little bit about the house scene here, maybe like before COVID, I was going to them. Obviously, everything really changed after COVID, but that was still a thing. Like we would do that and stuff in DC, but the time that I have to really like the indie rock scene was probably comparable to your grunge scene. Cause I was like 20 when the Strokes and like all that popped off. And I was living in New York during 9/11. So that was like my
when the Strokes happened. Like their record was called like, what's
is
it called?
Is this it? Yeah.
All I just said was like, is it?
Yeah. Is this it?
Is this it? I don't know. Like
it ended up being
me. I mean, being it, it's funny because yeah. I said this to a friend earlier because I don't, even though I put out records and book tours and everything and I am viewed to be a tastemaker or whatever, is like I went to a show and the opener was this band called Flake Music. And I was like, those guys suck, man. Like, fuck those. They're not good. And they literally were the Shins. That's who it was.
Oh,
now,
wow.
They were not the Shins then. That was what, and like when they got famous, I literally was like, well, very obviously, my taste is not going to be, it's not going to sell a million records. You know what I mean? Because I was like, those guys aren't good. That band's not good. No, maybe Flake Music wasn't good, but yeah.
I think someone,
obviously, I don't know shit.
Someone said that, I think, about, I think I love punk documentaries, so I'm also going to ask you to give a list of any, but the one that I really love is Punk Attitude, like the Don Letts one. And I believe it's like the owner of CBGB's was like, yeah, we had the Ramones in and they were like, this is terrible. Like, this is not, they're not going to be anything. And he's like, clearly I was wrong. Clearly, like they ended up being huge.
Well,
so.
I mean, if you think about like, and I've talked about this online, it's like, you've heard punk rock, so you know what the Ramones sound like, right? Like, okay, you've heard the Dead Boys or any sort of thing, the Stooges, like a lot of what you listen to, you're like, okay, I know the page that you're pulling from, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no one is as fast as them and as short as them, and there's no breaks, right?
No. So,
and it's just like Sound Garage.
Yeah.
And it's not like the CBGBs has got some like amazing fucking sound equipment, right? So we can debate all day, like, is it the Stooges? Is it not the Stooges? We could debate all day about it. That's fine. You know, that's hard online because one person reads one thing online and they're like, that's the truth. So they're like, Tina Bell created grunge. Death created punk. And it's like those people are both super important to the story,
super important.
But one person does not create an entire thing. It's weird when bands get discovered later. So Los Psychos is a band that is a lot of people will be like, that's the first punk band, except for nobody heard them in the United States, Canada. No one heard them outside of like South America and Mexico at all. So you're stating that something is influential that nobody ever heard.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to say revisionist history, but it's kind of, it's like a rewrite.
Yeah, and it's true.
That is like a super weird thing, because can't they both be important? Can't it all be important?
Yeah.
Does it have to be that you're the authoritative person that says that it's the most real or more important? Like, is Tina Bell important? Yeah. Did she create grunge? No. A whole lot of people all had to be together in a melding pot together, right? So one of the things that's really important that people do not talk about at all is there was this club called Gorilla Gardens. And Gorilla Gardens was this total fucking dump in our international district that had two rooms. One room was for punk and one room was for metal. And those shows would happen at the same time. And so you've got people in the hallway going from punk shows to metal shows.
Oh,
if you
cool.
really think about what grunge sounds like, it's really easy to be like, okay, a lot of rain, a lot of people in their house, a lot of people like going to shows where you're listening to metal and punk at the same time. That's what that is.
That's how it evolved. And that's what I love about grunge too. I mean, granted, yes, I know the blog and everything is called fashion grunge. And some people are like, that's not, oh, I'd post, I mean, that's not grunge. I'm like, I know, but it was what I came up with like 15 years ago. Like, I'm not going to just write about grunge.
Grunge is all just
the time.
Grungy.
It's just dirty and not, it's just not slick. It basically just means not Vogue. That's basically what it means. Like, it's not Vogue. That's basically what it is.
And that's very true to the spirit.
Yeah.
That is true to the spirit of the time. Yeah. It's a weird, especially if you're in deep in fashion TikTok or fashion IG, where people glamorize like the grunge collection of Marc Jacobs. And it's like, we laughed. We thought that was the funniest fucking shit ever.
I still laugh at some brands. I'm not going to like name check them, but there are some brands around now that they're like, they're so cool. And I'm like, $1,800 for these boots? Like, this is wild. Like, I don't even have that money. So, no. And I don't feel right. Or like a Sonic Youth shirt that I'm like, you bought the graphic and it's on like an $1,100 knit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's cool. I mean, that's really cool, but like, that's not what it
was.
Well,
a lot of them will not buy the graphic. You do know that, right?
Okay. Maybe. Did not know that. How are they getting away with selling Sonic something that much?
Not Sonic Youth. Sonic Youth is not a good example. And Nirvana is not a good example.
Because they're, there are a lot of places.
But like, you could take, like Miriam Linna, and I don't want to name the fashion house because I don't want to give them any credit, but like, Miriam Linna was the drummer for the A-Bones. She was the drummer for the Cramps. She runs Norton Records. She's still around. She used to do a fanzine in the 70s, and there's like a fashion house that like took one of her covers and made like $600 t-shirt. And like, people kind of called them out and was like, this is not your artwork. This is not your artwork to use. This is definitely not your artwork to steal. And I started looking at like his Instagram and I was like, oh, he also stole the fucking Ace of Hearts logo, which is like a not well-known record label that like you would have to know. You would have Ace of Hearts records in your early 90s record collection, know that logo. And I was like, and he took this. And it is stealing from a subculture that you are not part of, but only stealing parts of it where there's only a small amount of people that will catch it, right?
I was going to say, on purpose.
Yeah. So like, Sonic Youth is super fucking recognizable, but Nirvana is going to be super recognizable. AC/DC is going to be super recognizable.
Oh, yeah.
Like, these are all like licensing franchises, right? But you could very easily take the Goo record and adapt a drawing from a photograph that looks like that, because that is a photograph That yeah. was a photo. That's a drawing of a real people.
It's like a Ouija photo, I think, right?
I don't remember the artist, but I know that the two people that are in it are the sister and the boyfriend of like the two serial killers in the 60s in England. And that's like a photo of them on the way to court. But they then took a drawing of it. So like I can find the photo, I'll send it to you. It's actually a cool photo.
Oh,
pretty cool. Easy that you could make a copy of that. Like, okay, let's talk about like something like Mudhoney. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You could make a Mudhoney t-shirt after Mudhoney became a band. And if Mudhoney came to you, you could be like, you're not Russ Meyer, fuck you. you could take like the Mudhoney artwork and be like, well, you can't sue me, but Russ Myers can sue me, but I'm going to sell it to rock fans as a Mudhoney t-shirt, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing that like Mudhoney can really do.
Yeah, they can't do anything about that.
Right. And like Russ Myers is probably not going to see that because Russ Meyer is probably not going to walk into like a punk store in Chicago and see it up on the wall. Right.
And
that's
this
stuff gets really.
Yeah. Painful.
And now, you know, if it's on the internet, you've dumped over the bucket of paint. Like,
so. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't hide. Okay. Yeah. You
Someone's
totally can't hide.
It. Yeah. And that's just how it goes.
That's just how it goes now. Yeah, it's like you
got
to be.
I'm sorry, I got super off track there, but
no, that's okay. I mean, there's so many off tracks, but let's go back to the beginning. So, what are your influences growing up? This is pre-Seattle. So, what were you into? As
I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and I went to my first punk show, I think, in like my 83 or 84, and before that, like I got in a new wave, as with all things, because you're like. Punk rock is scary, but new wave is not scary. And I think before that, I kind of, you know, you look at music and you just kind of go like, I don't like REO. Like a record called You Can't Tune a Piano, You Can Tune a Fish. And like, even at 12, I was like, that is the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard. Like, I don't want to be into a band that's like that. Right. So. You kind of look at like what everybody is listening to and how everybody's dressing. And then you kind of go, that's probably not for me. And then you kind of go, okay, I'll start getting into new wave. Cause that's like, you know, you're 11 and 12 years old. And that's mm-hmm. a little less scary. And then I think by the time I was like 13 or 14, I went to my first punk show and I don't think I've really come back up again. I mean, we debate whether like grunge is punk rock, but like grunge is from punk rock. It's punk
yeah.
rock. That's what it's from. And you know, I still go to punk shows less so, like you said, because of COVID.
Yeah. It changed a lot.
But yeah, I mean, I just saw P.P. Arnold in London, you know, so, and I just saw, Jesus and Mary Chain in London months ago. So I'm still, yeah, their 40th anniversary. So I still go to shows. I just don't, you know. I mean, if you're not slowing down a little bit in your mid-50s, you know. But if I want to see
normal.
Something, I'll go. Yeah, if I want to see something, you know, I go. And I moved out of my parents' house in 87 and, like, was emancipated from my parents and, like, went to high school and was like a weed dealer and teenage drug dealer, not hard drugs, let me just clarify, like,
yeah.
Sold a little acid, sold some mushrooms, you know, sold weed on the regular, had like a shitty pizza job and paid rent, and like I was definitely the youngest one there, so like it was like I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, because like 17-year-olds should not live on their own. I don't know how to stress that enough. But
I can't imagine.
No. 17-year-olds should not live on their own. And then when I was 18, I moved to Seattle. And
why Seattle? Why did you pick Seattle?
It's really far away.
Oh, okay.
Really far away. It's far.
That was the...
yeah, far. It's far. Yeah, I got like my first shitty apartment, like crappy one room studio apartment. I think my rent was like $320.
Oh my God.
$6 a month or something, you know, didn't have a phone because I couldn't afford it. Like, had a shitty black and white TV because, like, I couldn't afford a color TV. So, like, when I say, like, I was broke, I was, and yeah, you know, just kind of figure it out from there, you know?
So when was ID,
figure out, you know, figure yeah. out how to come it. Someone will open the back door and they'll let you in and you just quietly sit at a table and they'll go get you beer and you can be underage. And
yeah, I was going to say, when did you first start to kind of regularly see that there was this scene popping up, or there were just, it was there just an influx of a lot of new bands at the time?
No, not until Nirvana. It was a totally normal, the scene was totally normal, totally fine. Okay. Super fun. I mean, really, if you want to know, I will tell you. So when I worked the Nirvana in-store, because I worked at a record store and that happened to be where the in-store was. And it's weird because people are like, that must have been the craziest in-store that you ever worked. And it's like, no, the Indigo Girls.
What was that? I want to know how that was crazy, the Indigo
Girls
one.
Because, you know, they're like one of the first, like, in my mind, like, big lesbian, like, you can be young, you can be gay, you can be feminine, you can be whatever you want to be. And, like, there's a rallying cry behind it, right? Mm-hmm. And from a music standpoint, I'm not a lesbian, so I'm not making commentary about the lesbian community. But as an outsider, I was like, oh, there's a lot of young lesbians here that are, like, in love with the Indigo Girls.
Oh, okay.
It's like the Nirvana in store is a bunch of people that all know each other, mm-hmm. hanging out. They're a band. They're an indie band. They're still an indie band. They're not yeah. a tape of that record went around. Most of us heard, like, earlier recordings on cassette tape of, like, 5 or 6 of the songs. So I knew 70% of the people that were at the in-store for Nevermind.
That's so cool.
So, but that's not what's going to happen. So then what does happen is the video comes out. It's an extremely catchy record, right? So it's weird. Mm-hmm. That same week, I went to the record release for the Damned compilation. I don't know if you remember, but, like, in 1992, like, everybody had to make, like, a music compilation.
Yeah,
there's a Neil Young one that's just Neil Young songs and it's different bands doing it. There's a Pretty Things one, so there's a Damned one that's like Flop and a bunch of really cool bands. It was on Dashboard Hula Girl Records, and they did a huge show of a whole bunch of the bands to promote the record. The club that it was at would not play the record, and they only played Nevermind between the bands. That's all they played. And lots of the fans went and were like, why aren't you playing the record? They're like, nope, we're only playing this. And I was like, man, I'm going to be sick of this record in the next, like, 2 months.
Oh my God.
Because it's everywhere, right? They're not famous yet, but it's everywhere, right? And then when it's on MTV, all of a sudden it's like, and that gets into SoundScan, and that gets into what's supposed to be huge. What is supposed to be huge is Michael Jackson or Garth Brooks. Those are supposed mm-hmm. to be the number one records, but SoundScan has come in where you're actually like boop, 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 and they're actually seeing real sales figures versus me calling you and you picking up the phone and telling me what you think is selling.
Which is crazy, right? That it wasn't based on data.
How you did it.
Yeah.
Well, it's like every week, right? You're looking at the numbers every week, right? So, I mean, I did inventory by hand for years.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And even when we got into being computerized, you know, things get fucked up, or, like, no one would write down the imports because, like, imports aren't in the system. Special orders aren't in the, you know. So all of that, like, you know, once a month, everybody stays late at night and everybody, you know. Also, like, you'd see, like, import classical, like, fucking CDs that had been sitting there forever, and they were, like, $30, and they probably did cost a lot to bring in at the time, you mm-hmm. know, and you would have a pricing gun, and you'd be like, no one's going to buy that for $30, and you just go, $19.99, yep. and you just move on. No one's going to check that.
No.
Who's gonna check that I changed that price? Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah, no.
So I think that to be in the middle of a cultural thing that happens where all of a sudden you go to a show and you don't know any of the people at the show.
Mm-hmm.
Or you've gone from knowing, you know, 50 to 80% of the people at the show, where all of a sudden there's people that like you've never seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like at a show. And I don't mean a young person coming in where they're like, I just got a fake ID and I'm 20. You know, that's not the same as like all of a sudden, like all the people that are in like towns outside of Seattle all are coming in. I did not go to shows for about a year after Nevermind came out. I didn't go to shows anymore unless I knew that they would draw I started going to garage rock shows because they didn't go to those shows. They didn't like those shows. I started getting into bands on Estrus and Lucky Records and like weird Japanese, you know, like now the 5678s are known because of Quentin Tarantino, but bands like that, I didn't go to shows that would have drawn anybody that would think it was grunge. And that it like kind of wrecked the scene for a long time. And then bands start moving to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously like Marc Jacobs happens. And then like you get weird product, like things like there was a product, I wish I had it still, called Grunge Gunk. And it was like a hair product to make your hair grunge, like a gel. And it was on the bathroom wall of my friend's apartment forever. So every time I would go in her bathroom, I would laugh at the packaging. And I remember asking her, she's like, oh, I threw it out when I moved. And I'm like, there's no trace of it on the internet. I've tried. But yeah, everything is advertising. I mean, you can look at all of that stuff. It's the Megan Jasper thing is fucking fascinating. If you go and read it.
I know it is.
Do you know who Megan Jasper is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you go read that, like the lexicon of grunge, it's like
so funny how they were just like, let's make up a bunch of random shit. Let's say like,
yeah, but also like some of us will use some of those terms now as like a funny,
like lame stain, you know what I mean? Like, was not, one
like an inside joke for a funny. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm just hanging on the flippity flop, and it's like,
oh yeah,
and they know one what you mean and two that you're referencing this New York Times article. So to anybody that is listening to this, it's like, you know, Google the lexicon of grunge and you can go.
Yeah. And watch Hype, the documentary on Hype. I think they interview That's everyone and talk about it.
Yeah. Doug Prey is a really nice guy. And has made a lot of great documentaries. But when he came, if you watch it, the first band is one of the bands from the label that I worked at. And he said the second I heard the beginning of that, I knew that was going to be the opener. And the bands that are in the beginning are like Cracker Bash, Flop, Fastbacks. So you're getting a picture of like what, you know, and for a while you would go to shows or it'd be like, we're making a documentary, sign this thing.
That was
pretty normal at the time, right? But I'm still going to Fastback shows. I'm still going to Flop shows. I'm still going to go see Cracker Bash. I'm still seeing those bands. But you're not like, you know, CZ hasn't come out with like whatever that's easy listening grunge album. And like, you know, it's just it's a weird time to have lived. And, but also like you would learn a lot more if you just like shut the fuck up and like asked a decent question, you would learn, like, you know, and there's going to be a Bam Bam documentary. And I know that they've interviewed a lot of people for it. I don't know what will happen with it.
Oh, okay.
But it's pretty easy to listen to that music and go, that doesn't sound like grunge to me. That sounds like kind of a punk band.
And
like
grunge
a slowed down punk band, but it doesn't sound like grunge. I'm not saying like, is it grunge or not? I mean, that's open to interpretation.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I saw them around. That band was on tons of lineups over the years. That's not a secret. Like Coffin Break and Bam Bam were on a lot of, and I make the Coffin Break joke because Coffin Break was the opener on like every single, like any show that couldn't get a third opener, Coffin Break was like, there, we're on. We'll do it. So, you know, and I mean, I suppose they got signed to Epitaph. It worked, right?
Yeah, big one.
You know, I mean, everybody wants to make it. Not everybody's going to make it, right? Are you going to be famous? Maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I just, I love the fact that we have so much now, like access to documentaries and access to kind of finding the history. That's how I would find. Another thing that we're really missing too is, I know that you worked in a record store. We're also really missing the record store as a gathering place and also just kind of as an educational tool, because you could go to
Clubhouse.
Yeah, a definite clubhouse. You can go to someone and be like, hey, I really like Malfunction, right? Like, what's some other shit like that? And then they'll say, oh, well, you may not have heard of this band, but you also would get those little tags on the listening stations, like for fans of Nirvana and like all these other huge bands that you would know. Yes. And then you find a local band. So we obviously have TikTok and we have the internet for people to tell you, but it's different when you get it.
Listen to Malfunction now.
Well, yeah, you can if you know about it, but how would you know about it 30 years ago? You're like, I want to know about a local band or who's coming to my town or like who sounds like this that's coming. Like, that's another thing that's really missing as a community space and to meet people and all that kind of stuff. Like, I miss the tower, even the Tower Records.
Yeah. Well, I think independent record stores, small punk, independent, like,
records
and stickers and records, that's a clubhouse.
Oh, yeah. Tower is not a clubhouse.
But it's great, so cool. If you are willing to sit and kind of read, if somebody's passionate and they write those little things that are like, do you like Mother Love Bone? You might like this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like Belly? Maybe you'll like this.
Yeah.
To a passionate person that's only making $5 an hour that can write little cards and stick them in front of records. Yeah. It's still amazing. A labor of love. You don't work at Tower to like become a millionaire. You work at being around record and being
like, and talking about records and talking about it with other people. Yeah.
But you know, Fallout was my local, and I mean, I went there every Sunday and it maybe only had $3 in my pocket, but I could get a 45 for $3 and I'd be really hungover. Like, I might have enough for like a coffee and a bagel and a 45. And I went there every Sunday. And then they know you. They know what you like. They know your taste. They get into what you like. And then that's how you start learning more about music and records, not by what is suggested on YouTube or Spotify.
Yes. Right? Because
then you're always in a funnel. And I'm not saying that's not great, because you can probably discover great, cool things. But when you're too deep in the computer funnel, you don't know how to like get out of that, I think.
Yeah, it's true. It's so true.
I mean, Spotify, I'm sure, has suggested some shit. Like, you walked away and come back and been like, what the fuck am I listening to? This is not what I put on. And they
do the suggested thing. Yeah. I find a lot of really good bands. What I like about my Spotify algorithm, I guess, that I've tuned over the last few years, is I'm finding a lot of bands. Like, I found a band just, I think it's like Ozine, they're called. They only had 3 songs in the early 90s. I think their label is pressing their like only 3 recorded songs. And I think they literally only performed twice. And I was like, how did Spotify find this for me? It's a shoegaze band. I was like, how did Spotify find this from like 1992? Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, they're selling the press now. So I was like, okay, well, that's cool. Like, I'm finding some old stuff that I didn't know about, old bands from the 90s that were around for 2 years that never got big. So that's another good thing about Spotify, is it doesn't just push new, like brand new stuff, which is pretty cool. It's pretty rad. I mean, I have so many questions. First of all, I'm really inspired by your concert ticket video that you have on TikTok, because I also have saved a ton of my stubs. It's cool though. We don't have them anymore, which is annoying. I got really annoyed when will call started to be a thing and I didn't get a ticket.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait,
print out,
put a ticket, put a ticket. Yeah. They're like, oh no, you're good. And I'm like, no, but I wanted a ticket.
I can't put this in my scrapbook, fuckers. I don't have a scrapbook.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's so
yeah. Like, I need to document. Like,
where are your Nirvana tickets? Where are your Tad tickets? Where are your blah, blah, blah tickets? And I'm like, those shows did not have tickets.
Yeah. And it was on my hand. Somebody wrote something.
Well, okay. I mean, how broke are you? Because if you're really broke and you know someone that can draw, then there was a like a fluid show or something that like sold out, and it was a purple donkey. That was the stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I sat in the bar next door and I drew purple donkeys on probably 20 people. Like, give me a beer, I'll do another one. Right. And I would look at my hand and I'd be like, okay. And then by the end of it, I could just draw a purple donkey. And it's like, I knew people that had like the pen sets that were like, you know, that big.
Yeah.
So they could be like, oh man. And you wait for your friend outside, you know, so the show's $6, but like they get you a beer that's a couple bucks and you copy their stamp. And like, that's how you do it.
That's how you do it.
The one thing I knew that was going to happen was work would happen. So sorry about that ding, but,
Oh, that's okay. That
would be a thing.
Well,
it's
okay.
Hard because we're open, so I can't not be the boss. I got to keep being the boss. So
right. And this is your this is your Coachella time. Whenever people are hearing this, it's going to probably be in between Coachellas. But this is your Coachella time. But how long have you been in the Palm Springs area? So you were in Seattle, and then you have a shop now. If people don't know, we'll get there. But
I lived in Seattle, and you know, the first time I came down to Palm Springs was like 18 or 19 years ago. And it's like, Seattle rains, it's gray, it's cold, mm-hmm. It's just as it is. So I came down with my ex-husband and I was like, this is fucking amazing. It was like end of January or something.
Oh, okay.
And I was like,
yeah, it's nice.
I'm in a short sleeve shirt, drinking a margarita outside, having chips and salsa, sitting outside. This is amazing. So I started coming once a year, and I was able to buy a house that I could not, like, I got a little bit of money and I was like, I can't buy a house in Seattle. Like, I can't even buy a house in Tacoma. Like, I cannot buy a house here. But I was like, you know, I could buy a house near Joshua Tree. Like, I could figure that out. I could make that work. And I bought a house. And I still have like a job, like a normal person job. I've been selling vintage on the side like this whole time. I kind of had a moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to turn 50 and I want to try to open a store and I want to try to have a really big party. Right. So I kind of had this idea that I was going to have Mudhoney and Radioactivity play my 50th birthday party. Pappy and Harriet's. And I was going to open the store. I was going to have a opening party. My boyfriend is still in Seattle. So I was like, I want to try to do this thing. And he was like, cool, that's great. Like, I love that for you, which is really dumb. Cause I was like, I just want to try to open a store for a year. Like, you know, can we figure this out? And he was like, well, what are you going to do if it's successful? And I was like, well, I don't know. Like, let's just burn that bridge when it gets there.
Yeah.
When I opened 31 days later, COVID happened.
Oh.
So I have just changed my whole life, put my life savings into opening a store. I do not believe in miracles, but like that shit's a minor fucking miracle because I should be out of business. And I'm thriving. I'm fine. I mean, it was weird because I was like, I still paid rent the whole time. I got the like $6,000 and limped along with rent a little bit more and had a little bit of savings set aside and just made it work.
Well, that's the punk ethos.
Now working on the ultimate kind of like snowbird. Like I spent 2 months, I close in July and August and I go to Seattle and then he was just here for a month. So we just go, like, I think our relationship sounds really weird to our friends, but to people that are younger, they're like, oh, that sounds totally modern.
That's cool.
Makes a lot of sense. But if you're in your 50s, you're like, why are you not married? Like, why don't you have a ring? Why don't you live together? Like what? Well,
yeah,
but it's just the age, right? I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah. So I bought a house here and then I was like, all right, I'm like, I would have been out of business in Seattle. And I really didn't want to open in Seattle. I really wanted to like try to open in Palm Springs. I just thought, I think what I do is missing in Palm Springs. There's a lot of vintage, but like what I do, there isn't. There's no one doing that. It's funny because like one of my competitors, he's a nice guy, but one of my competitors came in and was like, cowboy boots, t-shirts, jeans, who the fuck's gonna want to buy this shit?
And a lot of people.
When the pandemic happened, I was like, last laugh, motherfucker, no one's fucking getting out of fucking sweatpants, so fuck you, dude. You know, it's true. Like what are we wearing now? Like, and you get deep on like fashion TikTok and you look at new trends that are always kind of happening and since the pandemic, they're almost all comfortable.
Yeah.
Like almost all of the trends all have a comfort element to them, unless you are young and you really want to be uncomfortable for fashion. The majority of big trends have to do with comfort. And it's because we were in our house for a year. I'm assuming you were in your house for a year, you know? Like, I tell my friends, I'm like, better keep putting on jeans, better keep putting on structured clothes.
I know.
And they were like, what do you mean? I'm like, better put on those jeans every once in a while.
To see if they still button.
And it's okay if they don't button, right? I get people come in, you know, I get guys that have been in a USA 32 501 forever, forever. And like, I'm like, no one needs to know your size. Let's just get you looking good in a 33. Who the fuck cares?
Yeah.
You just, all that matters is your ass look good. Who the fuck gives a shit?
Yeah, the fit of your jean is what matters.
Yeah. Do you look good? Do you look good? That's all that matters. No one needs to know your size. And that's a confidence thing. So yeah. So I, I moved to Seattle in 88, and I still love Seattle and I'll always love Seattle, but the stuff that we all grew up with, it's not there anymore. It doesn't exist. I mean, you can go to a show and see the same, you know, like, I'll probably go to like the drummer of Malfunction's like yard sale this summer.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that'll just be random. And they'll be like, Megan, what are you doing? I'll be like, hey, Megan, what the fuck are you doing? Right. But that's just because you've lived there a long time and the old crusty fuckers that are still around are still around. Some of us didn't make it out. Some people didn't make it. Some people made it. And, you know, yeah.
Yeah, that's what
as
happens.
It goes, right?
Yeah, that's what happens. That's interesting how, so did you start TikTok during the pandemic? Is that when you were really starting? You said your shop assistant was telling you about it.
2020, like summer of 2021.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, like it's a weird thing. Like I went viral a couple times, like really viral a couple.
Yeah. How is that? I've never.
It's not cool. It doesn't fit. Well, like,
really?
You know, and you've kind of paid attention, like, oh, that person seems interesting. I'll go follow them. Right. Mm-hmm. But then you go to sleep one day and you wake up and you've like 30 or 40,000 new followers. You're never looking at that again. Like, I don't look at who follows me. I don't pay attention to it. Recently, I realized that Dylan Mulvaney was following me. And I was I will follow back Dylan Mulvaney. Because
that's cool.
Person's been following me. I have no idea. So, you know, it's too much. Because if social media is your job, or podcasting is your job, or whatever that is, right? Then that's your focus. Social media that's not my job.
It's not your job.
It's not my job. I create when I want to. I don't create when I don't want to. I talk about what I want to. I don't talk about what I don't want to. And if I take 3 weeks off, it's because I'm working.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not going to create a lot during Coachella because I am fucking busy. I'm busy. You know, I'm either doing laundry or prepping new stuff to go out or, you know, going to get LaCroix and snacks for us to have, you know, I just.
Yeah, that's the grind.
That's how you got to do it. So, yeah, I think that it's I got a couple death threats. That was cool. And
what?
I was like, really? Oh, we're doing God. That? Yeah. And I'm like, over thrifting?
Yeah. Like, I'm educating people on vintage clothes.
Yeah, it's totally weird. Because I look at it like this. It's like, okay, like drugs are legal in a lot of places, but like just know, like that's still drug dealers.
Mm-hmm.
The people doing all the back work, it's still drug dealers. Okay, so like don't be surprised, right?
Mm-hmm.
You and I probably agree that like sex work is work, right?
Hell yeah.
Do you agree that sex work is work? Okay, right? Those are totally socially acceptable things. But I'm going to get death threats about thrifting?
Yeah, what that about thrifting?
It's crazy. I got stitched by a guy that was really angry, and then a lot of people got really upset, and a lot of people called me reseller cunt without knowing, like,
really?
I buy most of my stuff wholesale. Oh, it's crazy.
Oh, it's wow.
Crazy. And I was like, I woke up and I'm like, okay, now I'm getting like warnings from TikTok about bullying. And I'm like, okay.
Wow. You know,
but it's great. Cause I can literally just take my phone and like walk away. Like I got shit to do that has nothing to do with my phone. So I just like, I just walked away. And I just block people. I just delete and block. People are like, you're deleting and blocking comments. I'm like, you're in my front fucking yard. I'm
allowed
to do whatever the fuck I want. People don't like it. Cause when you literally say to somebody like, get the fuck out of my comments, people do not like that. They will do it, but they're really surprised. It's the same with the store. I'm just like, I don't want you in my store. I had a guy come in and be super fucking racist. And his like wife was like, trying to figure out if he was racist. And I was like, ma'am.
Oh, God.
Ma'am, I need you to leave. Talk about it. I want to talk about the dynamics of whether you think he's fucking racist or not. Cause
yeah,
you're
like,
ma'am.
Take it outside.
It's like, well, yeah. Cause that when you get ma'am, like you can write me a Google review. You got to go. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Yeah.
So, you know. You got to just take your own line in the sand and figure out what that is for your own health and sanity, right? So what makes you feel healthy? What makes you feel okay? What makes you feel that you can sleep at night? So yeah, going viral can feel real funky because you end up on sides where like people become evil and then you're like,
no. And over what? It's like, I'm not talking about politics
anything.
Here.
It doesn't matter. Like, I had people get mad at me about how I say vintage, because I say vintage. That's a Midwest thing. That's like a middle of the country thing. Like, any from Nebraska or Iowa, that's how they're going to say it. And so people would be like, it's like you're saying spinach. And I finally reached the point where I was like, anybody that talks about how I talk gets blocked and deleted. I'm going
to. Yeah.
Fuck, like, dude. Go away. Bye.
Yeah, so, like, why are you on here? That's what I don't get. Like, I think someone just recently commented something like, I don't care. And I was just like, why are you here? Like, I don't spend time talking about what I don't like. Like, why are you here? Like, go away.
Oh, within your comment.
Yeah, it was like a Daria clip on from TV. And they were like, who cares? I was like, people are so dumb. I was like, you have way too much time.
You enough to fucking 3 seconds of your life to comment. So would you like to have some conversation about how much you really fucking care?
Yeah, it's like, what? I was like, this is why people don't have enough to do. This is why, like, you need to get out and, what is it now? They say touch grass. You really need to get out and touch grass. Like, please. Yeah, I mean.
One of my employees is younger and she was like, what was it like when you didn't have a phone and how do you separate from having a phone and how do you create a healthy environment with a phone? And it's like, man, I'm not 27, right?
That's the thing. I can tell you, but it's not the same world that I can, you know.
No, I mean, I can give you advice, but I also have to understand that like my advice is not rooted in your reality.
Yeah, very well put. Very well put. I interviewed this one creator who was like 22 and I was like, oh, this is going to be really cool because we're both into a lot of the same movies. And I was like, oh, this is going to be really cool. And they were like, wow, the one thing that I'm so jealous about your like age group or generation is you guys just did all this stuff and you didn't care. I was like, well, the thing is, it's not that we didn't care because everyone has insecurities as like a young person growing up, whatever. I was like, we didn't have any place to display that. So like the people that I was insecure from were like classmates, people that would like directly I was aware of, but Joe Schmo from across the state doesn't know me. So that doesn't enter in into like me posting an outfit somewhere open for criticism. You guys are really used to just putting out your own personality or opinion or whatever, and you're getting like pushback from it. But see, we didn't have anywhere to do that. And I think that's why a lot of millennials still, and like probably millennials and older, or probably my age group millennials, like carry that over into what we do now. Cause we're just like, I don't care. Like, listen to the show. Don't listen to
it. Many do and many don't.
Many do. Yeah. That's what you got to do. You got to not care.
Yeah. Right. So like in the 60s or the early 70s, let's say you're in London and you go to Speaker's Corner and you get up and you say whatever it is that you want to say. And like somebody takes like a photo of you and I show you this photo and be like, this guy was talking about like gender and race and like all these really cool topics that we're all talking about now. And you look at the photo and you're like, that's interesting. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Right. So I think if there was a girl or a guy, but let's say a girl that I personally found intimidating, whether I thought she was beautiful or maybe more interesting than I was or cooler than I was or into more interesting things or more sexually desirable, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I only had to run into her once in a while. Like maybe I ran into her on the street or maybe I ran into her at like a rock show. But I didn't have to see her tagged with other people that I knew all the time.
That's
or
true.
The draw to want to go look at somebody else's page. I think that is a part of this that is really hard within comparing yourself to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to be alive at another time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to, I got to be alive at the same time as David Bowie. And so did you. You should not want to be alive at any other time. Right?
That's true. That's true.
Think about all the music that you got to actually be alive for.
I mean, I wish I was alive just to be able to go to certain shows. But I mean, that's everyone, right? Like even, you know,
yeah, I want to go to the Monterey Pop Festival and see.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's everyone.
Watch video. And it's fucking awesome. Great.
That's true. That's what another thing about concerts and phones. I was like, everyone, there's going to be a high def YouTube of this in 6 hours with way better angles than you can get. Just put your phone down, please.
It does wreck the experience. And I really wish that bands would actually say, hey, for the first two songs,
that would be good.
Go crazy with your phones, and then can everyone just put their phone away? Because like Jesus and the Mary Chain, it was like there was a guy that like I couldn't get away from, no matter how much I moved, who needed to be near me because I am like flypaper for fucking freaks. Who had to have his phone, and it's like no matter where I moved, he'd be with me. It does wreck some of the experience.
The experience, yeah.
Well, also, I was at shows where, like, you were getting knocked around so much, you wouldn't have a $600 phone up.
No,
fucking way.
I was worried enough thankfully, as a photographer, able to shoot, like, I first started shooting bands, like, when I started getting into photography. And thankfully, there was that time where you got the first three songs, because otherwise, I had to have my camera wrapped up in, like, an old t-shirt in a bag, because I was going to get thrown, and that camera was going to get broken. Like,
yeah,
for sure. So yeah,
you got to get friends with the band, so you're like, I want to tuck in this corner.
Yeah, I mean, eventually I did, but it was a struggle. Yeah, it was a struggle, but it was cool. Time. Yeah, it was super cool.
It just takes time. That's one thing I don't, you know, I really want to be like, I'm in my day. I think in the time for the work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Making the connections, being a student, not being the expert is something that I really know that we're going to have to reckon with at some point, because like, how can everybody be an expert on fucking TikTok? I'm out in the real world. I know most people don't know shit.
Yeah.
Right? Or, you know, I am more excited by creators tell me how it makes you feel instead of telling me how it should make me feel. I want to know what you think. I want to know how it makes you feel. I don't need you to tell me how to think or feel. I'm fully engaged in my own thought process.
Yeah. And that's what makes a good creator, is your point of view. Is not
good relative, right?
It's like your point of view. That's what people connect with. They want to know what you like about it, why you like it. The people that I like, I like them. I like their connection to whatever it is they're talking about. So yeah.
And I might be interested in what you have to say, but as soon as you tell me how to feel, I'm not interested in you.
Yeah. That's true.
I'm not interested in what you create. I'm not interested. I'm not interested, right? I don't know. I think all this stuff, this subculture, this thing where it's like false creation of subculture, that like you can't, subcultures don't just like, you can't just be like, let's you and me create a subculture.
Oh, and go on the no.
It doesn't work that way. It's just not. And some subcultures stay around and some don't, right? Like when we were talking about go-go, it's like, that's a huge subculture that nobody talks about, but yet punk rock continues on. Whereas mm-hmm. like, I mean, even as early as like 83, people were like, punk is dead.
Oh, it's like, always dead somewhere.
It, right? But that's, it's older, right? You're literally like, what are you doing? You're mm-hmm. into nostalgia. You might as well be a hippie. You know?
I know. Everyone's like, stop living in the past. I'm like, yeah, but there's going to be a new wave. There always is a new wave. It just looks different than the next. And you never know the subculture when you're in it. It's like, it just is happening. It doesn't have a name yet until a mainstream media kind of gives it a name. But it's just, these are my friends. This is the bands we like. This is whatever it is. Like, whatever ends up happening is what ends up happening throughout it. So it's pretty cool. I mean, it's cool to discover too. I like that people are inquisitive about, like, some younger people are really cool. They're like, oh, tell me about this. Like, just give me a whole rundown. What was it like? And they just want to learn, which is one great thing I love about your page, is I get to learn about vintage clothes. And I like shopping vintage, but I'm not an avid vintage shopper because a lot of it, at one point, I was going to say, got very expensive. So I'm very like pick and choosy with what I did. But another question I had was, just the evolution of the resale industry. I mean, it's gone through so much in your lifetime, but how did you feel when it was like eBay and Etsy, you know, it's Depop, like there are all these branches, and then you have actual curation of vintage.
Curate, but I do know what you mean. Select.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you why.
Or select, okay.
I think the idea of using the term curate is making what you do more important than it actually is.
Okay. Right?
So like, until we get a new word for people that actually are curators, like someone who went to college for 15 years to become an art curator, which is what that word is really for.
Yeah,
we
galleries.
Need a new word for them. Yeah. We're all going to be curators, right? So if we're all curators, that motherfucker needs a new title, right?
That's
so
true.
I think it's a way of making what you do seem more important to the outside world than it is. Like, you see those TikToks where they're always like, this is what cool girls are going to be wearing. And it's like,
yeah, I've seen those.
Down, you know, the majority of people on the planet are not. How many cool, like what, the 15 cool girls are going to do that? Like, there's not that many fucking cool girls. There's not. There's not. Right. So I think that when you talk about vintage, I think it is great that people are into vintage clothing, because we have to stop dumping our waste all over the planet. So if you look at 94 and you look at NAFTA, which is really the creation of cheap clothing. And I get it. Clothing was really expensive. I mean, you had to save for things. You had to pick and choose carefully what you wanted to buy. If you were buying things in the early 90s, late 80s, 70s, because things are expensive. You put things on layaway, right? Mm-hmm. And I totally get it. Like, okay, corn syrup is in like all the fucking food that we eat is because corn is cheap, mm-hmm. right? It's a way of stabilizing the fact that we're never going to run out of food. Now, that sounds super fucking crazy when I say that to you, but there were times during the Great Depression and after where like food instability, which is also now a problem, is a very real thing, right? So we have food programs that are set up to make sure that we have enough food, but everything is a part of that. Now, I know that sounds completely fucking crazy, but it is similar to that. So NAFTA, people are like, this is going to be great. We're going to have more goods coming from other countries. People did not think that what was really going to happen was that Shein was going to make shirts that were $4.
I mean,
shirts should not be $4. Shirts should, there's no way that a shirt should be $4 unless it's used.
Yeah.
If it is used, great. Should it be $4? Yeah, probably. Probably should be $4. So I think that the impact of water to create cottons, and that's a long-standing problem in the world, that has been a problem, right? So if you start learning about cotton, you realize like, oh, we took people that actually were growing food and we made them grow cotton because we need so much of it. We are not connected to our clothes. Back when people had to like grow linen and have sheep and make sweaters and shirts or tunics or whatever themselves, that's when people were connected to their clothing. Now we think someone's connected to their clothing because they go into a fabric store and they buy a bolt of fabric and they make clothes from a pattern, right? We consider that being connected to our clothes. But if that bolt of fabric fucked up somebody else's life by growing it, but having lack of water where they are, because water rights are a huge thing. I'm getting super political as we're talking, because this is super political when you start talking about it. And it is like the Hydra, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of arms. There's a lot of parts to this that when you begin learning about it, become really difficult. So I try to really put it down to saying to somebody that like, it'd be better if you bought a used pair of Levi's and a new pair of Levi's or whatever jeans, we're speaking Levi's as an example, pair of blue jeans. It is better for you to do that strictly based on the water that you're going to waste by buying one pair of jeans. And that's a part of like the Shein thing people aren't even talking about, is like a human has to make that, but somebody has to like put it in a cart, mail it. There's all these parts that are
the freight
item for you to have that for $4 or $6. I mean, I don't buy a lot that's new. Like my impact is I drive a car and I get on an airplane. I know my impact, and my impact's not great. Like you fly somewhere, you create an impact, right? But my impact does not come from doing Shein hauls, from people in sweatshops having to create clothing for me.
Yeah. I mean, I am also of that, like, wear your clothes until the wheels fall off kind of person.
Yeah, and that's okay. And just know that, that can't go out in the vintage market. And that's all right, because you use that item.
Yeah. Right?
I think that this idea of everybody going to the bins, I think is... like, I get everyone's upset about it, and I do understand it. I'm not a bins person as I'm saying that. And my local bins very much are for poor people. Those are my bins. My bins are not Goodwill bins. My bins are a smaller charity, and that's what they're there for. And a lot of people from will buy stuff at the bins, and they take it back to Mexico and they sell it to swap meets in Mexico. Like, if you are buying from the bins and driving that stuff to Mexico to sell at a swap meet, you need cash. Like, I'm not here to make commentary on late stage capitalism or anything.
Yeah, and like how you make your your money.
That's just understanding where you are, right? Mm-hmm. That's just understanding that where you stand, what building you're standing in, and looking around and understanding like where you are, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I used to go into what people would call like the scary black part of town, the north side of town or whatever, right? When I was like a teenager, right? And it's like, if you're not afraid of black people and you're nice
then it's
and
you not nod scary.
And you acknowledge people, you will not have problems.
People are people. I mean,
you will not have problems.
That's how it is.
This is in the '80s. I'm going to preface like, if you learn where you are and how to act where you are, that's important. The reason that I bring that up is because when you go into the bins, it is understanding where you stand. It's also you go into a thrift store, understand like where you are, right? I think all toys should be free at thrift stores. All toys. All toys. If you go into a thrift store with a kid, I don't mean you can come buy all the toys, but I mean like a kid should be able to walk into a thrift store and pick out a free toy with their parent every time they come. Right. Yeah. I don't think that coats should be expensive in cold climates. Coats should be nothing.
Easy.
Right? Coats should be nothing. I'm getting off track. It has changed so much. And the reason that I bring up what I said, which is when I started to go to thrift stores as a punk rocker in 83, 84, poor people looked down on people that went to thrift stores. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the stigma of someone's old clothes was extremely strong. And it's been strong up until the last 20 plus years.
Yeah. So, I think even in my high school days, it was kind of, it was like late 90s.
If you went thrifting, there'd be somebody to be like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I bought a blazer and they were like, where is that from? And I was like, oh, it's from a thrift store. I don't know. It was $3. And they're like, like someone wore it. And I was like,
gross.
I was like, it was $3. Yeah. So it was until eBay. I think eBay is what like everyone started talking about. And then it was like, eBay was like the memorabilia, like the cool stuff that you could get and like the rare stuff. And then it became obviously all the other, you know, same websites like that now, but now it's a thing. I mean, I know that the resale market outside of like vintage, I mean, like just streetwear, I've watched all these documentaries about like what people do with Supreme. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, there are all these levels.
It's not an area that I'm in. That's not my area. And you know, it's weird. I was in London and I went to Brick Lane, which is the area that has the most vintage stores in London. And they're almost all Y2K and t-shirts, sportswear. Almost all.
Oh, yeah. It's like streetwear and stuff now.
Well, when I say streetwear, I mean like t-shirts.
Like sportswear. Yeah, casual.
Yeah, I mean, sportswear is a loose, you know, t-shirts. Y2K stuff and t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, shoes don't last. I mean, that's just... Sneakerheads are their own fucking
that's a whole thing.
And it's because they're like... They're like people that collected lunchboxes, you know? I'm like, it smells like a rusty peanut butter sandwich. I don't want to collect it. It smells like someone's weird old shoes. I'm not your weird feet. I'm probably not going to want to collect it. That's okay, right? So the problem is like those guys that didn't wear those shoes, they're all like, you can break them in half. You know what I mean? Because you got to wear your shoes.
Yeah.
You got to wear your shoes. They are their own animal. They're their own thing. I do worry about how deep everybody is in Y2K that want to do this as a business. And people are really upset at resellers not knowing that like most of them will do this for a year or two. They're going to look at the economics of like how fucking hard this is and how ahead you have to be, right? Because Y2K is going to go out. And if you don't know how to figure out what the next thing's going to be and buy it when you can find it, You got to stay 20 steps ahead at all times. You got to stay 20 steps ahead. So if you can't do that, if you can't pivot, I worry about some of these places really being able to make it when your next door neighbor, the guy down the street and a guy another quarter block are all doing the same thing. It's all the same thing. I mean, I walked by and I was like, that store looks like that store. It looks like that store. And I know what it is, right? I went into a, what I'd call like a little antique mall with like 30 or 40 vendors, all Y2K.
Really?
All of them. Yep.
Wow. Yep.
All of them. So they're all competing with each other for the same slice of the same piece of pie. So I do get what people are upset because you go into a thrift store, you go to the bins and someone has a cart with a huge amount of stuff. Now we could debate whether a poor person wants that or not, right? Poor being relative, that not debating that right now.
Does
the person that really needs a wool coat want like a pair of like 90s hot pants? Like, maybe not. I don't know, right? So I think this is a lot. I think people don't understand the work, the amount of work. It's like you have to really like it. A lot of people will fall out of this industry. They're not going to do this forever because they're going to realize that like there's not the money that people think there is unless you find like a treasure trove of really, really rare t-shirts or something extremely rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it's everybody fighting for the same piece of pie.
Yeah.
If you're really good at it and you like it and you've been doing it a long time, it's second nature and you can just do it. So people are always like, oh, every single one of your tags has like the era. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's
you're
paying for, right? You're paying for me to tell you what it is and what the era is that you're paying for, right?
Yeah.
That's the job, right? And there's also the amount of repair. If I showed you that my repair is almost at the height of like a fifth grader, you'd be like, what?
Oh,
why?
My gosh. Wow.
And it's like buttons fall off, seams got to get repaired. I mean, I have, it's just, it's as it goes. I do. Like,
it never stops.
I do like 13 loads of laundry for the store a week. That's not my laundry. That's store laundry.
That's the store. Yeah. That's so cool.
That's the store.
That's the way it goes around.
Yeah, but it's weird. Like, I had a guy that's within the like reseller thoughts who like left me, like set up an account and left me 2 Google reviews to like damage my Google, like to who's never been in the store. If you come in the store and you hate my store, go ahead and review it. But to like set up an account just to call me reseller bitch.
Yeah.
Basically in a nice way is like, and I've known other people that have had this happen.
Wow.
And I was like, please tell me what day you were in the store. Cause I know this person's never been in my store. So it's, I'm really good at what I do. It's not for everybody, mm-hmm. but am I knocking people down at the bins? That's not what I do. That's not what I do. This girl got into a really big argument with me online about it. And then she finally was like, well, if it's not about you, just let it fly. And I was like, I can't fucking let it fly because you're in my fucking comment section.
Yeah.
Being a bitch. Like,
again, why are you here?
Yelling at me.
Yeah. Like,
let it fly.
Why are you here? So,
right here. Yeah. So I think it's great if you want to get into it for the long haul. You have to do the research. You have to make mistakes. You have to fuck up. But because that connects to the nobody wants to admit that they don't know everything, right? Instead of saying at the beginning, you're like, I'm a student. I want to learn.
Yeah.
That takes a level of confidence to say that to somebody. Now you have that confidence. And so you don't think it takes confidence. But would you have said that when you were 19?
Oh.
No. Because you're like, no. I'm not going to show anybody weakness, right? That's, you know, vulnerability.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you a crack to like get into that crack to say shit to me, right?
Yeah.
Like how, like, we insulate ourselves. Whereas now I'm like, if you are really open to understanding, that's how you end up understanding about all kinds of things. Like, I'm so deep on Black TikTok. There's shit being talked about. I don't understand. It's not for me. It's because I'm in so deep on that side. And when you end up on a side, I'm not participating in that. I don't know what it is.
I'm just watching.
Okay, no, this is not for me. That's okay. But this is so beyond my realm that I'm like, this is not for me. Totally okay. I can't even learn anything from it because it's so beyond my reach. And I'm okay with that, right?
Yeah.
But I've made a conscious choice to be on that side. I've made a choice to be there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to make a choice to be there, then that's the same as standing in a room with a bunch of people and looking around and going, it's like starting a new job. You start a new job, shut the fuck up, look around, figure out how all these people work together.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to insert yourself. You don't have to, you have strong opinions about all kinds of stuff. You don't have to start like, what are your 10 favorite movies? Like on the first day. Cause they're going to be like, is the weird movie girl that you hired? What? Right. You like ease into that slowly. You kind of figure out how everybody works together. Right. That takes time.
Yeah.
In your life. So like,
that's what's great about being old. I feel like that's what's great about getting older, and I wouldn't trade it for anything, because
you're open-minded.
Yes. I mean, I've always just been kind of always just like tell me what it is. Like, I'm down to hear whatever. I'm just, you know, I'm still a student. I probably will be a student until the day I die, because it's
a mindset.
How can you?
It's a mindset.
Yeah. How can
and
you know everything?
To some of your podcasts, and it's so funny because I listened to the,
oh God,
the SSE Punk one.
Oh yeah.
Because it's so funny because it, well, I've never seen it. So I will see it now because I'm curious.
It's funny. Yeah.
It's not of my time. Mm-hmm. It's not of my time.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really funny when someone will ask you something and you're like, that's like trying to talk to me about like reading Rainbow. I don't, I know what reading Rainbow is. I know, yeah. I know what it is, but I can't talk to you about it because I've never seen it because it's not of my age. Is it?
There are certain things that I watch now that are definitely not for my age. Like I'm obsessed with just like teenage subcultures in general. Like it yeah. just shows up in a lot of my work.
You gotta
so
know about it. You gotta see
I
it.
Gotta know about what's happening in Euphoria, because like what the fuck's going on over here? And it, and especially when I also pay attention to fashion and I can see that in fashion that, oh, this TV show is inspiring this look now. Where is this from? I want to see what the kids are doing. And it just, yeah, I mean, it just kind of blows. It's really funny too how people discover certain things. Like I did the Decline of Western Civilization on the what? podcast, and some people are like, what is this? I'm like, oh my God, Penelope Spheeris. She's
did
like,
did you do all of them or just
no? I did the first one on Patreon because I was like, this okay. is really obscure. If people want to, like, I will do the other ones. I'm like, if people want me to, but I'm trying to, like, you know.
All right, the Metal Years is the one where it's just like
yeah, the such
shit. The shit those, like, wow. I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary Trekkies. Have you seen
no.
Trekkies? No. Highly recommend. Okay. You don't have to like Star Trek.
Yeah, I was it's like, I don't know nothing about like, Star Trek.
Okay, Trekkies is a Star Trek documentary, but it's just fans of Star Trek.
Oh, okay.
So it's basically like, I sat in a bar with a girlfriend of mine, and we spent 5 hours talking about Trekkies, and it's like an hour and 40-minute movie. Like,
oh wow,
you can cover, like, we could cover like 5 hours, but I think Metal Years is kind of like that, where like some of the shit they're saying, you're, oh my God, like how
it's so,
like, that is a subculture. That is like, that is,
oh,
a
hell yeah,
culture of like hanging out on Sunset Strip, racing your car around, making your hair big, doing all that stuff, trying to be famous, right? Like,
very cool,
fat, fucking fascinating. And so I'm not a metal crazy. Man at all.
But. No, I'm not either. But I love any behind the music on like Guns N' Roses, like Skid Row, like give it to me. I want to know about your crazy shit and all this weird stuff that you did. Like the Viper Room is like my current, like I'm deep diving into the Viper Room. So like I'm all into like anything I can find. Like there's so much out there, which is great that there's access to it now. It was a lot harder when I was younger. It was like an indie video store. And that's how I would find movies. But now we can watch documentaries. When it was harder, when we were younger, it was like, who was talking about a documentary? Not many people.
Were talking about, like, what's the guy that made Fog of War or whatever? Like, The Thin Blue Line.
It's oh,
like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm not going to talk to you about The Thin Blue Line for an hour, for fuck's sake.
Like,
I'm sure he's guilty. I'm sure he got off. Like, what do you want me to fucking tell you?
Now it's just a whole...
That's the kind of stuff of like, I have a girlfriend that actually, she edits documentaries. That's all she does is edit documentaries. So
that's cool.
I'm always getting to hear some weird shit in the background about her doing, you know, she did a basketball one recently and she's like, yeah, they had to explain the game to me. So that
yeah, I would have no idea. Like, be like, I don't know.
Okay, here's all the shit you need to know, right? Because it's like all the most famous like basketball players.
Oh, like, yeah.
But I don't understand the game. Like,
yeah. Oh, I don't either. I don't know.
And she's just like, you just figure it out. You know, it's all telling stories anyway. So it doesn't really matter.
That's true.
But
yeah.
Penelope Pierce, I feel like she's able to get people saying some of the stupidest shit ever. That I'm just like, it's so good. It's so good. You know, Suburbia, you watch it now and you're like, really? Somebody gave her money to make this movie? Like, and it's genius when they go to watch the TV. Have you seen this movie?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the movie I'm talking about? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when they all get their little roll of like lawn
mm-hmm.
to like roll out to watch television. At the time, I was like, what the fuck is that?
Like, she's one of my inspirations. I love her and love what she's been able to do. I mean, just other films outside of, she just has such range, I feel like, in everything. She had a really good episode with Henry Rollins when he had a show on IFC, like, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago.
He's got his fucking hands on everything, dude.
And yeah, he talked to her and I was like, oh my God, he talked to her. Wow, it's so cool.
It's of the time, right? You know, I mean, he's got his hands on all kinds of shit.
Oh my God.
He's a fan. He's a huge music fan. He's got his hands. He's got his fingers on all kinds of crap. I have friends in Australia that are in a band that he got super into. And like, they're just young. You're like young kids at the time. It's like they get a call that's like, Henry Rollins would like to know you're playing a party, but he can't find the address in like Melbourne, Australia.
Oh my God.
Like, give him the address. And they're like, Henry Rollins wants to come see us play a shitty party? Like, what? He's that so kind of cool. Fan. He's a music nerd that talks too much, I think. I met him in 84 or 83, and he like asked me the time. And I literally looked at him and I was like, do I look like a person that has a watch?
Like, okay.
I'm like a dumb 13-year-old. Like, what? I don't have a watch.
That's so funny. He's on another one. It's Hometown Heroes, another DC Hometown Hero.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I love obviously, Henry. I mean, he's so California now. It's kind of
funny. Oh, yeah. I know. It's wild. It's really wild. But yeah, he's
that's right. You can adopt a new place and still be where you're from, you know?
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, that's part of who you are. That's what makes you you, you know? Well, this has been so much fun. I feel like I could keep talking to you forever, but I have to let you go because it's going to be like a 5-hour show.
9 hours later.
9 hours later.
It is really good to talk with you. Well, I don't know. Someday we'll catch up and talk about movies. At some
yes, point. I was going to say, maybe we should do an episode on The Decline and the Metal Years.
Love to do an episode.
Maybe that's what we should do.
Yeah, if you want to do hype, I'll do hype. Yeah.
Yes, I've done hype, but I would love to do it with someone who's been in and around the scene. So I'm definitely down to remix hype. That would actually be really cool. That would actually be cool. But
okay,
yeah.
Hey, okay. Have a really killer day today.
You too. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I want to thank Megan for coming onto the show. You can find her on TikTok and on Instagram at Melody Note Vintage, and all of the links will be in the show notes. And I'll see you on the next one.
This is all we need. A couple of smokes, a cup of coffee, and a little bit of conversation. You and me and $5.
You got it.